The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, where Robert Ginsberg has been hosting Shades of Jazz for 37 years. Mike Shirkey has been presenting the Pick and Post for 36, the two longest-running music programs in radio in Northwest Arkansas. You can hear Robert tonight at 10, Mike tomorrow night at 7. And this is Ozarks at Large for Friday, October 13th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead this hour, more music. This from the women in Sugar on the Floor. They'll be performing tomorrow night in West Fork, and we'll hear them sing in the Furman Garner Performance Studio in a little over half an hour. First, we begin our Friday the 13th edition of Ozarks at Large with Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics. He's with us from his office in Fort Smith. Michael, as always, thanks for your time.
Hey, not a problem. And I love these band names. It was Sugar on the Floor.
Sugar on the Floor.
I have some friends who live over near Nashville, and there's this Harpeth Festival, or I think it's called Hoedown on the Harpeth. One of the bands that's playing is 50 Shades of Hay.
That's so pretty good.
I love it. So I love these band names.
All right. Let's start with a topic that we touched on last week, an audit dealing with the Fort Smith Police Department. A little bit more information over the past 7 days, correct?
Right. Just a more detail on what's not being handled correctly, I guess, is the way to say it. Just a little bit of background. Fort Smith City Auditor Tracy Shockley was asked by incoming Police Chief Nathaniel Clark to audit the department. Not an unusual move, you know. Probably he had reason to worry. There was some issues, and so she finally was able to pull the audit together, and it found some problems. Essentially, in their criminal investigation division, where, you know, they will seize money, seize equipment, other things of value, and then there's a process for how that can be used for, you know, police budgets, police needs in the future. Well, the bottom line is that the police department itself was not following the rules on how they access that money and those items. And there were 8 exceptions, she called them. That's a kind word for not following the rule. Mm-hmm. But 8 exceptions where there is no real accountability for money that's gone or how it was replaced. And so, you know, what we don't know yet, Kyle, is what does this rise to some level of civil or criminal penalty? Or is it a firing offense? Or is it demotion? You know, what, something's got to change. You know, there has to be. It allegedly shows a clear or a pattern of just, you know, kind of willy-nilly, just, you know, come get what you want, no accountability. And of all people, you want your police department to not behave that way.
The last bit of information has yet to be released.
They sent us this redacted copy in a PDF form. Well, we convert all our PDF documents to Word documents so we can use language cut and paste and pull the story together. Well, when we did that, all that redacted information became unredacted. I'm not sure that's a word, but it showed up in the Word document. And so we had the names and some of the processes and some of the other information that they had wanted to redact. Now, we didn't use that. We wouldn't do that. Some of these individuals may be undercover officers, so we don't, that would just be wrong. Hopefully other media outlets will also not use that information if they were able to convert that document. So just it'd be nice for the city of Fort Smith to get its act together at some point.
Supporters of an intermodal facility in Fort Smith are trying to get their act together. See how I did that?
Yeah. Well, and this is a tough issue, Kyle, to look at because, you know, an intermodal facility does have some merit, but it's the way the market's changed in terms of intermodal, in terms of what, for example, J.B. Hunt has done with being able to put boxes on trucks and trains. A lot of that, I wouldn't say has negated the need for a lot of these port operations, but it's certainly made the market more difficult. And so there's kind of a growing question about does the Fort Smith area need to continue? Does Van Buren, Crawford County, and Fort Smith and Sebastian County need to continue funding this intermodal authority that's trying to, you know, develop this facility. $1.6 million has been raised since 2009, primarily from those four governmental bodies, Crawford County, Sebastian County, Van Buren, Fort Smith. And part of the problem, some people don't mind this fact that I'm fixing to throw out, but most do find it troubling. Representative Matt Pitch, he represents Fort Smith, a Republican. He's received just short of 700,000 of that 1.6 million since 2009. That's almost 44% of the total. That doesn't include his legislative salary either, but that has a lot of folks saying, look, enough's enough. We need to cut this off. If you can't find a developer soon, then shut it down. We also received some analysis from Eric Lind. He's an 18-year veteran on river ports. He's been in port construction, port operation, dredge management, all of it. His analysis showed that, and it's pretty clear, it's hard to argue that a port, an intermodal facility in the Fort Smith area just isn't feasible. He argues and shows using a timeline that if boxes, for example, were unloaded at the port of Long Beach in California and put on a train, they could be here in 2 or 3 days, where it could take almost 2 weeks to come back around Panama Canal or up through New Orleans and up the river. And so he just talks about how it's just not feasible from either a time standpoint or a cost standpoint. And he argues that it's just time to cut your losses and quit trying.
Let's talk a little bit of development in Northwest Arkansas, because we can always talk about that. News this week that there's a $180 million project planned for Springdale off Don Tyson Parkway.
Yep. And, you know, we've been following this. That the property sold, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, or at least was reported, the first reporting of it being sold. But Sage Partners, Griffin Realtors, are working on what's really going to be they're calling it a Class A, first-class mixed-use development site. It's going to be very similar to what you see up at Pinnacle there in Rogers. But it's going to be $175 to $180 million project, and it's really not a surprise. Anyone that's familiar with that property, it's on the west side of I-49, but it's right, you know, just south of the Arvis Ballpark, south of the Arkansas Children's Hospital, Sam's Club. That area is going to take off, maybe not to the extent that Rogers area did around I-49, that east west Rogers area, but that part of Springdale. This is, Kyle, I'll be very surprised if this $180 million project is the last big project announced for that part of Springdale. But I'm sure Mayor Doug Sprouse is I'm sure this doesn't hurt his feelings.
It doesn't hurt the sales tax ledger eventually in Springdale either.
Property taxes, all that. School districts are going to love it as well. But you can almost throw a dart at a map in Northwest Arkansas, and there's probably going to be something going on where the dart hits.
Maybe it's because it's Friday the 13th. Maybe it's just because. But occasionally you think back to 2007, 2008. Does the word bubble come up in anybody's conversations?
You know, yes, because we mention them often. You know, Paul Gatling, who's our editor at the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, and Kim Souza, who also keeps up with some of the development up there. We constantly ask these realtors, both residential and commercial, and we talk to the folks at the Center for Business and Economic Research. We talk to bankers. And so far, I mean, the consensus, the overwhelming consensus, is that this is all demand-driven. It's not speculative-driven. Mm-hmm. It's demand-driven. So as long as that continues, you know, I don't see a bubble. I think the bubble would have to be a national bubble. It'd have to be a national economic downswing. And even then, I still think the Northwest Arkansas region may be insulated to some extent. But right now, the experts, and I'm going to have to take their word for it, do not see the emergence of a bubble.
All right. You can find that and many other stories at talkbusiness.net. Stay safe this Friday, Michael Tilley.
Yes, sir. Go Hogs. At least try to go.
Thank you, Michael.
Travis Meadows had a dark view of life, colored by illness, alcoholism, and loneliness.
You know, it's the glass half full or the glass half empty, and I was always like, who drank my water?
His new album, First Cigarette, tells his story of darkness and discovery. That conversation, the latest on the California wildfires, and all the news, Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News. If I could buy
myself Weekend Edition Saturday, tomorrow morning, and every Saturday morning from 7 until 9 on 91.3 KUAF. The ability to physically browse books, magazines, and journals inside University of Arkansas Mullins Library will end next year. More than 1.8 million volumes will be relocated to a new locked, climate-controlled, 27,000-square-foot storage facility under construction along Hill Avenue in South Fayetteville. Researchers, students, professors, and the public with UA library cards will check out materials remotely and request digital copies of articles. Kelsey Lovewell Liphard is Public Relations Coordinator for University Libraries.
Now, there are two big changes that are happening that kind of led to the need for this storage facility. One is that the nature of libraries is changing. More and more of the materials that our students and faculty use are being made available online. So we're living in a digital world, and libraries are adjusting accordingly, collecting more and more digital materials. Now, another change is the jump in enrollment.
In 1997, when Mullins Library underwent expansion, the student population was about 15,000. This fall, enrollment is 27,500, and that means cramped library quarters. Along with four smaller libraries, Mullins is the main research library on campus, which also houses administrative offices and special collections. A 500,000 volume children's library will remain in place, Lippert says, along with special collections located in the library's lower level. Everything else will be moved into new storage facilities.
That is the beautiful part of this and why we're doing this. Because that enrollment that I was talking about has jumped from about 15,000 in 1997 to 27,000 this past fall, we need a lot more study space than we used to need. So the idea is to repurpose the space and reallocate it for individual and group study areas.
Ground was broken last summer. Construction is expected to be completed by the summer of 2018. The facility will also have a preservation and conservation area where materials will be cleaned, repaired, and restored. Renovation of the main campus library remains in the early planning phase. Cost for the $11.4 million high-density storage facility funded by university student facility fees. And we've posted a rendering at our website, OzarksAtLarge.com.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Additional support provided by Arcom Plus, providing digital and offset printing, graphic design and promotional items, and a variety of business services for jobs of all sizes. Located just off College Avenue at 461 East Township in Fayetteville, Arcom has been locally owned and operated for over 25 years. Printing NWA.com or 444-7711.
The checklist of concerning issues in 2017 is long. Gun violence, relations with North Korea and Iran, tax reform, and more. This week, Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, asked Arkansas's junior senator, Republican Tom Cotton, about many of those issues, beginning with guns. Roby asked the senator about frustration some people have expressed with the inability for what they call common sense discussion about gun rules in the United States.
I think what some people in Washington call common sense gun control sounds to a lot of Arkansans like uninformed efforts to put the federal government even more deeply into the Second Amendment. So, for instance, something you mentioned, the so-called gun show loophole. There simply isn't a gun show loophole. Any federally licensed firearm dealer at a gun show has to conduct a background check, just as he would if he was in his store. My wife and I were at a gun show in Little Rock just a few years ago. She bought a pistol there, and she went through a background check there. Now, if you're an amateur hobbyist or you're selling your firearm at a gun show, no, you don't have to. Just like you wouldn't have to if you were just selling it to a buddy at your deer camp or giving it to a family member or so forth. I don't think many Arkansans believe that someone who sells a firearm to a neighbor or to a member of his deer camp or give it to someone in his family should have to undergo a background check. So there's misinformation about the nature of our gun regulations, but ultimately, so many of the regulations we have, they're not going to stop the kind of evil that we see in so many of these mass shootings.
Let's turn our attention to something on the domestic front here. There was a September 30th deadline for Congress to reauthorize funding for the CHIP program, the Children's Health Insurance Program, as well as community health centers, which serve a large swath of Arkansans as well as other people across rural America. What's going to happen on this front? I think there's some uncertainty about the funding at this point in time, and right now they would be in financial limbo.
Roby, I expect the Children's Health Insurance Program and community health centers will be reauthorized and funded later this year. This was caught up somewhat in the debate, in the broader debate about health care, but now that is behind us for the time being. I expect you'll see those programs reauthorized and funded. I'm supportive of them. Most Republicans and Democrats in Congress are supportive of them. Unfortunately, Congress oftentimes drops the ball when it comes to authorizing new programs or reauthorizing old programs. I think there's something like more than 200 programs that are currently past their authorization date, but they still continue to function under their existing laws. But I think Congress will be able to turn our attention in the coming months to having a new authorization for CHIP so we can make sure that it has any updates or modernization it may need.
Let's talk about tax reform. Will we see a bipartisan approach to tax reform in terms of a vote? Will it go through the committee process? Will there be an open amendment process? Or do you think we'll see kind of the approach we saw in healthcare, where there'll be a pretty much partisan effort right out of the gate, and we'll see where that goes if the votes can be there to do it?
Roby, I'm a little bit more worried about the tax bills of working Arkansans than I am inside baseball and process questions. So ultimately, what I want to see is tax legislation that puts a little more money in the pockets of hardworking Arkansans. But to those process questions, yes, the Budget Committee is working on a budget that the full Senate will consider later this month, and then we'll move on to tax legislation. I wish that we could get some Democratic support. You know, most Democrats these days, though, have become somewhat radicalized on the tax question. They're not willing to even entertain the prospect of simplifying our tax code and eliminating a lot of the special interest provisions in it, unless you're also going to raise taxes. So we'll see what we can do to move them along, but many of them have been very dug in and ideologically opposed to any kind of tax reform without higher taxes on Americans.
And Senator, let's talk about Iran. You gave a speech to the Council on Foreign Relations talking about your support for decertifying the Iran deal, replace it with something stronger. I guess my question to you is, do you still think diplomacy will work with Iran, or are we just delaying the inevitable that there will have to be some sort of military action, some sort of military intervention to get that situation to a satisfaction point for you and for others in Congress?
Roby, first, I think it's important to start with first things. Iran is an outlaw regime. It's the most anti-American regime in the world. It's got the blood of hundreds and hundreds of American soldiers on its hands from Iraq. The problem with Iran is not the nature of the weapons it seeks, but the nature of its regime. Diplomacy can work with a nation like Iran, but it has to be coercive diplomacy. And that's where President Obama really dropped the ball. He made it clear from the very beginning that he would not take military action, no matter what he said. He outlined the two options that we faced in his mind as complete capitulation to Iran, which we did, or forcible regime change with 150,000 heavy mechanized troops followed by 10 years of occupation, as we saw in Iraq. Those are not the only choices we have. In fact, we've seen this with Iran. If you recall, in 1987 and 1988, Iran was mining the Persian Gulf. We reflagged oil tankers, and when Iran continued to do it, we blew up half their navy and several of their oil platforms. And guess what? That war ended pretty quickly afterwards. So if we are forced to take action, make no mistake, we can totally destroy Iran's nuclear capabilities. They know that. They need to know that we're willing to do that. And if they do, then I do hope that coercive diplomacy can get a better deal for the United States and that we can block Iran's path to a bomb once and for all.
Do you think that this coercive diplomacy, as you call it, and you said in your speech to the council, if forced to take action, the United States has the ability to totally destroy Iran's nuclear infrastructure, and if they choose to rebuild it, we could destroy it again until they get the picture. Would that be a solo effort? Do you think there would be support within the Middle East from some of our allies, support among Europe for that type of approach?
Absolutely, Roby. Israel and our Arab allies in the Middle East view all of Iran as the number one threat. Because remember, Iran is not just a nation state, it is a radical revolutionary movement. It supports terrorists and militias in Iraq and Lebanon and Syria and Yemen and Bahrain and Afghanistan. It is an outlaw regime. So our allies in the Middle East, if anything, want us to take a tougher approach with Iran. Again, I hope it doesn't reach that point, but the Ayatollahs need to know that it will if they don't agree to sit down to a new round of negotiations and to fix all the many problems with the nuclear deal. Because ultimately, that deal doesn't block Iran's path to a bomb, it paves Iran's path in a mere 8 to 13 years, which may seem like a lot of time in some ways, but it's the blink of the eye in the life of a nation. Remember, it's only 12 years after the agreed framework with North Korea in 1994 that they detonated their first nuclear weapon in 2006. And look where we are now with that country.
Well, that leads me to my next and last question here. Let's apply this approach to Iran that you're talking about, this coercive diplomacy to North Korea. Everyone seems to think that if we were to try to destroy North Korea's nuclear capabilities, that it would be much more catastrophic than what I hear anybody talk about in terms of destroying Iran's nuclear capabilities. So tell me, what's the difference there?
Well, so, Roby, let me just back up and make the point about Iran and North Korea. We do not want to let Iran get to where North Korea is today. That would be so much more dangerous than North Korea is. North Korea is an isolated, small country at the edge of the world. It's surrounded by four other nations who are vastly richer and more powerful than it is. It doesn't have a revolutionary expansionist ideology. Iran has none of those things. Iran does have that revolutionary expansionist ideology across the Middle East and really across the world. Iran is surrounded by other nation states that are peer competitors to it that would seek nuclear weapons if Iran got them as well. So that's why we need to nip this in the bud in the Middle East now, because what we see in North Korea today is the result of 25 years of kicking the can down the road. And now, because that country has nuclear weapons, because it has a growing missile arsenal, and potentially the capability to marry those two together and strike not just South Korea and Japan, but United States territory in Guam and Hawaii and Alaska and even the mainland of the United States, it makes it much tougher to confront them. I think that we can continue to put more economic pressure on North Korea. Ultimately, though, it's going to take pressure from China. And at this point, China views a nuclear North Korea as being their interest. So probably the next set of steps would be to put more pressure on China and force them to put more pressure on North Korea.
Senator Tom Cotton speaking with Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics earlier this week. In the first part of their conversation, there was discussion about a term used often in political circles, the gun show loophole. It's a term some advocates on all sides of the gun regulation conversation dislike because of confusion that can come from the phrase. As Senator Cotton told Roby, under federal law, any person who engages in the business of dealing in firearms must be licensed. The murkiness is in the legal definition of the words engaged in the business of dealing in firearms. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives offers this explanation on their website. A person engaged in the business of dealing in firearms is a person who, quote, devotes time, attention, and labor to dealing in firearms as a regular course of trade or business with the principal objective of livelihood and profit through the repetitive purchase and resale of firearms. Under federal law, conducting business with the principal objective of livelihood and profit means that the intent underlying the sale or disposition of firearms is predominantly one of obtaining livelihood and gain, as opposed to other intents, such as improving or liquidating a personal firearms collection. Consistent with this approach, federal law explicitly exempts persons who make occasional sales, exchanges, or purchases of firearms for the enhancement of a personal collection or for a hobby, or who sells all or part of his personal collection of firearms. Fewer than half of the 50 states require background checks on all firearms at gun shows sold by people not licensed. That is, guns sold by people not deemed to be engaged in the business of dealing in firearms. Three of the five states with the most gun shows annually, Illinois, Pennsylvania, and California, do require background checks for purchase from anybody selling at a gun show. Texas, the state with the most gun shows annually, only requires background checks at gun shows from sellers required under federal law to be licensed. This is Ozarks at Large.
Talk Business and Politics is sponsored by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. Bank of the Ozarks, you have a friend here. More information at bankozarks.com. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, we serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. Arkansas Manufacturing Solutions, providing executive-level leadership and management consultative services to Arkansas companies in the areas of innovation, exporting, operational excellence, and sustainability. More information at mfgsolutions.org. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. Learn more at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
A couple of notes about words and pronunciation now. Earlier on this edition of Ozarks at Large, Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics used the word unredacted, and he said he didn't know if that was actually a word. Well, we've checked with Merriam-Webster. It is early 15th century, unredacted. So, Michael Tilley, you are in the clear. Not in the clear. Yours truly. Yesterday, I mentioned that the John Brown University volleyball team would be playing Oklahoma Arts and Sciences on the Oklahoma Arts and Sciences campus, and I said that campus was in Chickasha, Oklahoma. However, the campus is actually in Chickasha, Oklahoma. My apologies to everyone with the school and in Chickasha, Oklahoma. This is Ozarks at Large.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, rock and roll is hard to resist.
Before he threw the song away, he just left the bass and the drums and my part.
We revisit the stories of the Latinos who helped shape rock music. That's next time on Latino USA.
Tomorrow at 3 on 91.3. It is Friday the 13th, October 13th. 2017. I'm Kyle Kelms. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News studio is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Have you decided it's completely impossible to do everything cool this weekend?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to play rock, paper, scissors, thereby eliminating the need for dice.
Sure.
Okay. So we're only looking at three options for each time period.
Okay.
And that's maybe three out of 18.
Okay. All right.
Beyond that, you got to pick up a copy of What's Up.
You just can't simply right now tell us about everything.
No.
All right.
And if you can't pick up a copy of What's Up, you can go to nwaonline.com/features/What's Up, and you can find all the other choices. But here are this evening's choices. And your job is to keep track of how much each rock, paper, or scissors group would cost.
Okay.
Okay. So this evening's choices. Choice number one is the Eureka Springs Bluegrass Festival.
Sure. Okay. Yes.
So that's choice one.
Okay.
Choice two is Emergence.
Yes.
Ballet Arkansas making their season premiere at the Walton Arts Center, which is pretty cool. And it's $10 as part of the 10 by 10 series. Mm-hmm. Choice number three is the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
In Rogers.
This is, the cast is fresh off of a 3-week sold out run of the play version, the Rocky Horror Show. And somebody got the wild idea they should show the film, the cast should put their costumes back on and dance and sing along. And it's going to be tons of fun. It happens at 10 o'clock tonight at the Victory Theater. Tickets are $20 with $10 prop kits available. Okay, all of you out there and you do your choice of rock, paper, scissors.
I went scissors.
Okay. Then you're going to Rocky Horror. If you did paper, you're going to the ballet. And if you did rock, you're going to Eureka Springs for some bluegrass.
Which is free, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I got it. All right. I see how this works.
Saturday daytime.
Mm-hmm.
Choice number one is the Arkansas Festival, which celebrates the diversity of Northwest Arkansas. It happens from 9 to 5 Saturday at Shiloh Square in downtown Springdale, and it's free. Choice number two is 50 Years of Play. This is hosted by Fayetteville Parks and Rec, celebrating 50 years of Parks and Rec.
Right.
It starts at 9:45 at Wilson Park, and then from 3 p.m. till dark at Walker Park, and there's a concert by Crescent City Combo at Walker Park at 5. All this is free.
Free.
Choice number three, Vintage Market Days. This is where you find all of those vintage things turned into other things.
Repurposing, I believe they call it.
And upcycling and all of those fun things. It happens from 10 to 5 on Saturday at the fairgrounds, the Benton County Fairgrounds, in off of Regional Airport Boulevard in Bentonville. It's $5 to get in.
Okay.
Okay. Do your rock, paper, scissors. Well, rock, paper, scissors.
I'm going paper.
Then you're going to 50 Years of Play.
Yay!
If you picked scissors, you're going to the Arkansas Festival in Springdale.
And how much is that?
That's free.
Okay.
And if you picked rock, you're going to Vintage Market Days.
And that is?
And that's $5.
Okay.
All right. Saturday evening.
That was pretty inexpensive options right there.
Saturday evening, choice number one is Symphony of Northwest Arkansas's first concert of the year, Masterworks One.
Right.
Guest trumpeter is Christopher Coletti. This happens at 7:30 at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville, and tickets start at $30. Choice number two is the Masquerade Ball, benefiting the Western Arkansas Ballet, because it sounded like fun. That happens from 7:30 to 10:30 at the Fort Smith Riverfront Glass Pavilion, and tickets are $50.
All right.
Choice number three happens at the Walton Arts Center. It's the Hunter Tones.
Great jazz. Out of Brooklyn, they met in Columbus, Ohio.
And they're I think they're the first of the Starlight Jazz Series. Maybe
this is
not.
This is the season opener.
Okay. And you may recognize John Lampley, who is their trumpet / sousaphone player from the band OAR. Who knew? That happens at 8 o'clock at the Walton Arts Center. Tickets start at $30.
Okay.
Okay. Rock, paper, scissors.
I'm going rock.
All right. Then you are going to the Masquerade Ball.
I better get a costume.
For the Western Arkansas Ballet. If you chose paper, you're going to the Sona Concert.
Okay.
And if you chose scissors, you're going to the Hunter Tones.
Gotcha.
So what's our total?
Well, if you're doing rock, you're going to be spending $55. If you did paper, you're spending $40. And if you did scissors, you're doing $50 to $60, depending on whether you get that kit in Rogers.
There you go.
So it kind of broke down evenly.
So it's a $50 weekend.
There you go.
Go out and have fun. Love you all. Bye.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
91.3 is supported by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include American College of Radiology certified imaging departments, infusion centers, pharmacy, clinical trials, and more. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Arts Series presents Ca Public Symphony Dramatique, Thursday, October 26th at 7:30 p.m. This 8-member troupe pays homage to Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet to evoke the emotions of seduction, desire, unchained passion, and death through dance. Tickets and information at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600.
This is Ozarks at Large. We're going to spend a few minutes talking about music. Three women from the ensemble Sugar on the Floor recently came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio and sang for us. Sugar on the Floor specializes in harmonies and songs that might be decades old or even older. They'll be part of an old-fashioned, family-oriented night of music at Library Hall in West Fork tomorrow night beginning at 7. And then next month, they'll be participating in a weekend-long gathering of traditional dance, music, and song on Mount Sequoia called Fine Times at Our House. More details about those events ahead. First, Sugar on the Floor in performance in the Furman Garner Studio.
A do love shortening bread. I do love shortening bread. Everybody loves shortening bread. I do love shortening bread. Ever since my dog's been dead, hog's been rooting in my tater bed. Sure am glad my old hog's dead. Got some shortening for my bread. I do love shortening bread. I do love shortening bread. Everybody loves shortening bread. I do love shortening bread. Babies lying in the bed, one was sick and the other most dead. Called for the doctor and the doctor said, give those children some shortening bread. I do love shortening bread. I do love shortening bread. Everybody loves shortening bread. I do love shortening bread. Children sick in the bed, heard that talk about shortening bread. Popped up well to dance and sing, skipped around and cut the pigeon wing. I do love shortening bread. I do love shortening bread. Everybody loves shortening bread. I do love shortening bread. I do love shortening bread. I do love shortening bread. Everybody loves shortening bread. I do love shortening bread. My mama loves shortening bread. My baby loves shortening bread. Everybody loves shortening bread. I do love shortening bread.
Julie Minkle, Mim Heinrichs, and Joni Green from Sugar on the Floor in the Furman Garner Performance Studio recently. Tomorrow night, they'll be at Library Hall in West Fork for a concert along with another ensemble, Winslow Squirrel Jam.
Yes, this is a group that is, for the most part, made up of people who live in West Fork. But,
Winslow.
Winslow, yes. Obviously. But they have allowed a few outsiders to trickle in. And so Joni and I have been lucky enough to be in that group. And it's a wonderful opportunity for people learning instruments and learning how to play with other people and in front of other people. And we sing lots of really fun songs.
How does it work? How will this work on the 14th?
Well, we're going to put this on at Library Hall in West Fork, and Sugar on the Floor will do a 45-minute set, and then we'll take a little break, and then the Squirrel Jam will do their 45 minutes, and then the last 15 minutes we're going to combine the two groups and do some songs together. So it's a nice way to keep community going.
Library Hall is downtown West Fork?
It is. It's on Garfield Street, right next to the library.
All right. You should know that you wouldn't call that downtown?
Some people get kind of confused with the Opry there. So.
Oh, yeah. It's not.
It's not the Opry.
Yeah. It's neighborhood, yeah.
When you combine those last 15 minutes, do you already know what songs you're going to play?
We do.
Okay.
We do. Squirrel Jam sort of had to pick and choose from their repertoire because most of what they sing is from when we were, you know, in our 20s. Very singable things.
Songs everybody knows.
Things that everyone wants to sing along with. But that's not really what Sugar on the Floor does. So they have been adding some old-time traditional tunes. So they worked really hard at going through the list and picking out ones that would work for both groups.
Well, let me ask Sugar on the Floor, how do you decide a song can enter the repertoire? I mean, does one come to you? Do you have a discussion about it?
I think we started singing mainly traditional songs, and we had spent a week immersed in culture in Kentucky, where Gene Ritchie started this whole family camp. So we love traditional music, and we've also been influenced by Mountain View and by Sarah Gray and others. But we also love whatever pleases our ear or our hearts, and harmonies are important to us. So we'll just hear a song and bring it to each other and see. You know, sometimes it takes a while for it to gel, but usually we all love similar songs, so it works. Yeah.
Okay, so the event with Winslow Squirrel Jam and Sugar on the Floor, which is at Library Hall in West Fork, that's the 14th.
Correct.
An evening.
Of October.
Of October, right. 14th of October. Open to everybody?
Yes.
Yes.
$3 suggested.
$3 suggested donation.
If you didn't have the $3, you could, of course, still come.
And if you wanted to give $6.
It would be lovely. Yes.
I'm in public radio. Yeah, I'm always thinking, you know, three is great, but if you can afford $6, yes.
All the proceeds will go to Library Hall, the both Library Halls of Winslow and West Fork.
That's together. Great. Now, the event in November is a multi-day, sort of, with workshops and yes. things like that. That's on Mount Sequoia.
Yes. That's called Fine Times at Our House, which is the name of a traditional fiddle tune, a good one. And it says a lot about the kind of weekend we're trying to create, that it's very inclusive. We'll have workshops for singers, workshops for musicians, lots of dance, different kinds of dance workshops. Square dance and contra dance and flat footing and just a little bit of everything. And then there will be social dances in the evenings that we certainly hope community people who aren't even there for the weekend might come and dance with us. Friday night there'll be a concert that's open to the public. So we're trying to make it just a good time for everybody. They'll be jamming on the porch and people could just come and do some workshops and then go walk around the mountain for a while. So we think it'll have something for everybody.
You mentioned there will be flat footing?
Yes.
What is flat footing?
It's too bad my husband's not here. Steve Green could tell you a long lecture about the differences between different kinds of percussive dance. But Mim Heinrichs is here. And she is a percussive dancer, so maybe she can answer that question.
Well, I'm sure Steve would have a much more thorough explanation, but it is a type of traditional dance. Most people think of clogging, and they recognize that and can make some sort of connection. Flat footing is similar to that, has a slightly different rhythm. It's what you would see in the old days if you went to the Mountain View Courthouse Square and saw people who had brought out a little piece of wood, they would be flat-footing.
Okay. And it's less of a performance dance than a accompaniment to tunes kind of dance. It's meant to be the percussion track for
musicians. Is the percussion.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do people participate in Fine Times at Our House? I mean, do you pre-register?
They can pre-register for the weekend, and of course, they can come and register at the door. We always hope that people will pre-register, and we do have a website, which is on this piece of paper somewhere. if they go to it's www.nwacontra.org, and there will be a place to click to pull up the flyer for the weekend.
Mim, you grew up in Johnson.
Well, or I grew up in Fayetteville.
Fayetteville, okay. Mm-hmm. Joni?
I grew up in Oklahoma.
Whereabouts in Oklahoma?
Norman.
Okay.
I grew up in Western Illinois. I was born in Chicago and grew up in a little town called Sterling, Illinois.
So a smaller town?
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear a lot of music on the radio? Was a lot of music in your house? And was it some of it the music that you perform?
I grew up listening to folk music, so this is, you know, the music that we sing is dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. I heard every kind of music growing up, but lots and lots of folk music, and then of course being young in the '60s, that's what you did at parties. You sang folk songs, and everybody learned to sing harmony and pick a little guitar. And how about you all?
Yeah, we're the same vintage. we were in different places doing pretty much the same thing. In the recesses of our minds, we all have this common shared past.
I remember my mom always playing the Weavers and Trini Lopez, and then it moved, and the Beatles came out when we were 10. So that was life-changing. And then I remember as a teenager, I love the sense of community because everybody listened to the same radio station. So we call each other and say, you know, so-and-so, this is on the radio right now. Turn on your radio. And so we all were a huge musical community. We didn't have separate devices with our own preferences, and we couldn't fast-forward to get through a song. We were more tolerant.
There wasn't on-demand.
Uh-huh,
that,
exactly.
When you're talking about a new song that you really liked, it might be the only chance you had to hear it for a day or two.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Something lost with that. Also something, though, to be said, I'm sure you would agree, with the fact that you can hear about perhaps a singer from the 30s or 40s who you've never heard of. I remember I heard something on NPR about April Drains, blues singer.
Yes.
Within minutes, I was able to download her catalog onto my phone.
That?
There's something to be said for
it's
that.
It's pretty wonderful.
I love
that.
It is
wonderful.
Yeah.
But can we all agree in this room that live music, if at all possible, supersedes
hands
anything
down
else?
The best.
And there's so much live music now in Fayetteville. I love it. Lots of the Roots Festival is huge, and all these house concerts. You usually have to pick between two events each weekend night because there's so much going on.
And there's live music in West Fork, I hear.
Mm-hmm. Why, yes, there is.
Yes. Well, the Opry's been going
and
for a while.
Not just at the Opry.
Not just at the Opry. Well, can we have a preview? Let's talk. Can we have some live music? What would you?
Of course.
What would you like to play?
Well, you could twist our arms.
Okay.
Oh, all right.
Joni Green, Mim Heinrichs, and Julie Minkle with Sugar on the Floor in the Furman Garner Performance Studio recently. They'll sing tomorrow night along with Winslow Squirrel Jam at Library Hall in West Fork. They'll also be participating in the weekend called Fine Times at Our House on Mount Sequoia in Fayetteville, November 10th, 11th,
and 12th. You can find out more about that weekend of traditional song, dance, workshops, and more by going to the website nwacontra.org.
Tristan Harris once had a successful career in Silicon Valley trying to manipulate your attention, and then he became disenchanted.
And so you started to see technology not as a vehicle for improving people's lives, but really as a means to persuade people to do things.
I'm Guy Raz. Ideas about manipulation? That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, Sunday afternoon at 1 on 91.3 KUAF. Few sports notes before we end this Friday edition of Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas Razorback team picked up a victory last night in Baton Rouge, defeating LSU 1-0. Arkansas now 8-7-1 overall this season, 3-3-1 in the SEC, the seventh shutout recorded by the Razorbacks this year. Up next for Arkansas, a home match against Alabama. That will be Thursday night at Razorback Field, beginning at 7. Also picking up a win last night, UAFS volleyball team defeated Newman University. That now makes 9 consecutive matches in the win column for the University of Arkansas Fort Smith volleyball team. They'll next be in action at home Tuesday night against Southern Nazarene. That begins at 6 in the Stubblefield Center. And the Arkansas volleyball team in action tonight in Barnhill Arena against South Carolina.
The second annual Amp Fest is this Saturday, October 14th, at the Walmart Amp in Rogers. This weekend's beer, music, and tech festival will feature unlimited samplings of more than 60 craft beers from 20 local, regional, and national breweries. Proceeds to benefit Walton Arts Center's programs and education. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets.
A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Chickasha, Oklahoma. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. We'll end with music from the Shook Twins, recorded during a live edition of Ozarks at Large during a previous Fayetteville Roots Festival. I bring them up because they're one of the many bands playing on Friday and Saturday at Basin Park in Eureka Springs as part of the absolutely free Eureka Springs Bluegrass Weekend. You can find out more at eurekasprings.org. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Back Sunday morning at 9 with Weekend Ozarks at Large. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great weekend. Unfinished.